Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. I'm here today with Mr. David Berkeley QC. David is the head of chambers at Three Paper Buildings, a deputy judge, a qualified mediator and arbitrator, and a lecturer. Our legal conversation today will be on employment law. So hello, David.
Hi, good afternoon, Hattie.
And our first question on employment law is going to be, what is employment law? How can it help me?
Okay, well, employment law is very important because people at work have rights and they also have liabilities. And employment law is the words we use to describe the relationship between workers and their employers. And it's derived partly from statutes passed in our legislature, partly based upon European directives that we've made into our law. And it's also an amalgam of contract law and, of course, the case law and the individual rights derived from the individual contract of employment.
Okay, so we're basically saying, okay, so there's laws out there that can protect you as employees and employers, actually. Employment law would go through to both. And it can help you apply certain rules and regulations to how things should run.
Sure. So workers' rights are fundamental rights. Those are rights that, since so many people today define themselves, their relationship with other people, by reference to the workplace, because that's the source of their livelihood, because that is their source of self-esteem. So we have developed sophisticated laws which are of vital importance to many, many people.
Okay, excellent. That's really helpful. Okay, so we're going through some very commonly asked questions to try and help people understand what their position would be in certain circumstances. And one of the most commonly asked questions by people is, I'm made to feel constantly upset or demoralised by an individual or group of individuals that I work with. What can I do about this? What should be the initial steps I should take? And, you know, what can I do about it, basically?
Yes. Well, it's important, first of all, to see what really is the nature of this. Is this low level? Is this bullying? Is this discrimination? Is it harassment? Because effectively, you're describing a situation where somebody's feeling upset and demoralised, and they're entitled at work to be safeguarded against all forms of bullying and harassment. And that bullying and harassment might be from fellow employees, could be from their line manager, could even be from members of the public. When they're providing services to the public. And it's the employer's obligation to ensure that, first of all, they're safeguarded from that type of behaviours, and that any complaints of bullying or harassment should be then investigated and prompt action taken to protect the employee. And the failure to do so can give rise to a claim for constructive dismissal. It can give rise to an employee saying...
So constructive dismissal, meaning if I got up and I left because yes. I just wasn't happy with what was going on,
yes.
that is a form, would you say, David, of constructive dismissal?
It can be. I mean, a lot of it will depend how much the employer knew of what was going on,
right.
what information was being given to the employer through the line of management, and what steps, if any, the employer taken. But there could be circumstances, certainly, where the bullying and harassment that's taken place, which has not gone checked by the employer, can give rise to the employee saying, the worker saying, I've had enough of this, walking out, and then bringing a claim in the employment tribunal.
Yes, for sure. Okay. And so... most people, actually, that are facing problems in the workplace for the first time don't even really understand the word grievance,
yeah.
you know, raising a grievance. So what is meant by that? You know, what is meant by saying raise a grievance?
So just to follow on what we were discussing earlier about somebody who's feeling upset with what's happening in the workplace, he may not want to immediately raise a grievance. He may want to have, in the context of what we've just described, initially some form of informal meeting with his supervisor. And it's quite important that there is an opportunity for people to be able to have that sort of discussion with somebody who is not the culprit. Obviously, if it's your manager who is the...
I mean, if it's a small organisation where there is only a few of you, then it becomes tricky, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Really? So if there is a large organisation, if there's a human resources department with a good manager that you can speak to on a confidential basis, if there's trade union representation and you're able to speak to your convener, those are obviously useful things. But there comes a point where you can no longer just discuss this on an informal basis, but you want to actually raise a grievance. Now,
make it formal.
So the way to do that, you've got to understand that today the employer has obligations to provide a grievance procedure. So we have a code of practice for that.
Any size of employer, obviously.
Yes, but obviously the extent to which that is provided and what machinery is available will obviously depend to some extent on the resources of the employer, because these are guidance contained within codes of practice. The current code of practice issued by, we may come on to discuss it later, ACAS,
the
Advisory Conciliation Service. And there are certain statutory provisions that relate to that. So first thing first, there should be a grievance procedure that's available to every employee, which is in writing, and it should be shared with the staff.
So they know what to do if
exactly,
they want to.
Exactly. It should be in the manual. If you've got a manual, it should be on the company intranet, whatever way they communicate. And that should set out the details on an industry and employer specific basis, you know, how you go about it, who do you send the letter of grievance to, who do you write to, how long each stage should take. And it's important, if you are the person who is advancing this grievance, that you do let your employer know really as soon as possible what it is that you're complaining about. And you should be providing that information, if it's not to your immediate manager, because he may be the culprit, he or she may be.
Yes, that's who you may be having the issues with.
But exactly. So you need to be able to ensure that
and
once...
put it in writing.
It's got to be in writing.
Email,
put it in writing.
Exactly.
And then once you do that, then the employers have to arrange a formal meeting to discuss the grievance. And that should be held without unreasonable delay. So there are no specific time limits, unless there are time limits set by the employer in the handbook, on which then get incorporated into the contract of employment. But generally speaking, what the guidance and what the code of practice is saying all the time is that all these steps should be carried out without unreasonable delay.
Right.
Unreasonable delay in terms of making the the first meeting, communicating the response.
So the employer meeting with the employee and saying,
that's
right, we've received your grievance, now we're ready to discuss this
with you.
In terms of a time limit, you know, we hear this word time limit, limitation.
Yes.
In employment law, so from the date of that an incident has occurred.
Yes.
Is there a... How important, what is a time limit? And okay. I know it will, yeah. you know, yeah. there will be different areas where it, yeah. there will be different yeah. time limitations, yeah. but how important are time limitations and what are they?
Time limits are very important if you're going to be making a complaint to the employment tribunal or effectively going into court. Then there are prescribed time limits and you can lose your right if you delay beyond the relevant time limit. We can discuss the specific time limits applying, for example, to unfair dismissal claims later if you wish. But in relation to the grievance procedure, it's important that these things are dealt with, if possible, informally and promptly. I mean, most disputes, most things that arise that causes a tension between employers and employees, if the people want to continue in the relationship, so it's something falling short of dismissal or grounds to walk out, you're trying to repair the relationship.
And to be able to continue the employment.
Exactly,
yes.
like all relationships, yeah. whether it's family relationships,
yes, yes.
marriages, whatever it may yeah. be, you're better off first talking, aren't you?
Trying to resolve it.
Exactly,
yeah.
And that's what the code of conduct is seeking to do. It's to encourage people to be able to talk about these things on an informal basis, to try and reach resolution, and they're encouraging them to do so without unreasonable delay. Because clearly, like we know in any form of conciliation, if you leave things unduly...
They fester, they build up, and then eventually things can boil over,
exactly, can't they? Exactly. So there are certain things, the mechanisms that are incorporated in
that. Don't delay, sit down and speak to the nearest person, you know, to the situation, basically. So your line manager's manager, if it's the line manager you have the issue with...
Yeah.
Talk about it, try and resolve it informally, internally first.
Exactly, but there are two things I would stress, even at this stage. First, you've got a right to be accompanied to the meeting,
right.
and that's important. So whilst you don't want to necessarily bring in a lawyer, and it wouldn't be necessarily ideal to do that, to make it such
it'll
a formal process,
but
you're entitled to have a colleague come along to accompany you so that you feel that you're not beleaguered. You're entitled to have a trade union representative come along if you have that sort of set up in your workplace. And it's also important that when you're discussing it, you're discussing with somebody who can deal with this fairly and impartially. So you want to make sure that it's going to somebody who's able to consider what needs to be done and is able to reach a decision that's as fair and impartial as possible, and is able to communicate that decision to the employee in writing. And then another significant thing is that if that grievance isn't resolved at that stage...
If you're not happy with the resolution, for example, the
exactly.
time limitation then starts from the date that the actual incident happened. We need to be clear on that as well.
Well, you've got to be very careful about it. You've got to be careful about what you're intending to do. So, I mean, a typical example, let's take an extreme example, a situation where you've got some act of victimisation or discrimination. And let's say you've had a series of these, and then you come to a point where you think that's the last straw. So you've got to bear in mind that if you're going to bring a claim for discrimination, or you're going to bring a claim for victimisation, then you need to do that within 3 months.
Of the date of the incident.
Of the last incident, if it's part
yes.
of a series.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
this is so important that if you're in
yeah.
any doubt... You need to take legal advice.
Right, absolutely.
Because what you don't want to do is you can apply for extensions at the employment tribunal, who've got the power to grant extensions, but you don't want to be in the situation where you're having to do that.
Yeah.
So, but we're talking now about still not something falling short of you walking out. We're talking about trying to repair the relationship. And within that, the grievance procedure has to provide not only for a method whereby these matters can be resolved in this informal way, but resulting in a written decision, an outcome letter on that particular grievance, but also that should tell you that you've got the right to appeal that if you're not content with the action that's been taken or with the decision that's been reached. And when you're talking about an appeal, that again, the appeal has to be heard under the Code of Conduct without unreasonable delay. And the employer has to ensure that the appeal is dealt with impartially.
Again, so, will the appeal then necessarily be dealt with a different person to the person that's yes. actually dealt with the grievance? Because then it could be an impartial...
Yes. So wherever possible, it should be dealt with by a manager who's not been previously involved in the case.
Yes.
And again, you've got the right, it's a statutory right, to be accompanied at the appeal as well.
Right. Meeting. So once you've submitted your appeal, they've had time to digest it, and they want to meet with you and speak with you about it, you can have a colleague there or a member of the trade union, if you are a member of the trade union, accompany you as an impartial person to give you some support. So another question that people often ask and, you know, are actually quite worried about is, can I be fired? Can I be asked to leave the company for filing a grievance? Because obviously, all of a sudden, somebody somewhere internally is going to think, maybe you're a troublemaker, or you've made a complaint. Yeah. You know, what's the position with that generally? Yeah. You know,
well, I can tell you that there are examples of cases where grievances are brought almost. By people who feel unhappy, and they're bringing grievances on so many occasions that they are clogging up the system for their employer. But in most cases, grievances are likely to be grievances that are sincerely held, and they require investigation, and they require a determination by the employer without any unreasonable delay. So in most cases, if somebody were threatened, for example, with dismissal for filing a grievance, that would be completely unacceptable, and could well be something that we call victimization.
So it just adds; it could add.
It could be the basis. Yeah. Absolutely. So that itself could be the basis for a claim of discrimination, and could result in a very significant penalty on the part of the employer.
Yes.
Again, one should take legal advice on this. But very often, the making of the grievance is what's called a protected act. So in other words, it's one of those acts which provides you with protection from any form of victimisation.
Right.
And it couldn't be a ground upon which you could be, for example, dismissed
upon. So don't be afraid to file a grievance. Don't be afraid that you'll be asked, you know, you'll be told, well, you know, you're fired for doing that.
No.
Because it's not allowed. You're not allowed to get rid of you. You're not allowed to sack you, fire you, while you're filing your grievance. So that's really helpful. We've discussed, you know, making the grievance, what the grievance means, having the meetings, a meeting on the back of the grievance, appealing that if you're not happy. And what about if you're not happy with the appeal? So you're not happy with what your company has ultimately underlyingly had to say to you. What do you do then? You're still not happy.
Yes. So you've exhausted the internal procedures, effectively. You've got to look at your contract of employment, because there may be, outside the code of practice, there may be within your own employer, there may be specific contractual rights in relation to dispute resolution and grievance procedure. But assuming that you have exhausted all your internal processes for dealing with your complaint and you are still unhappy, then you've got to ask yourself some specific questions. You've got to ask yourself, you know, can I continue to work for this employer? Has the employer's conduct been such as allows me to treat my employment as having been effectively repudiated by my employer? Is this conduct that would entitle me to treat this employment at an end? And I think that's a difficult discussion to be having, and one shouldn't act without taking some advice on that.
Yes.
And it may well be that your trade union representative or your lawyer will say to you, you know, it may not be necessarily the thing that justifies you walking out, but it's part of a process which has undermined you to the extent where you now are going to treat that as the last straw. And I can advise you that you would have a claim in what we discussed before, which is constructive dismissal.
Yes, which is where you say, the situation is so bad here, my complaint has not been dealt with, the outcome is not satisfactory to me, I have no choice but to leave.
Yes.
You actually leave, you probably don't even work a notice under those circumstances, you leave, and that is considered constructive dismissal, and that's where that whole that starts.
And three things you need to bear in mind if one's taking that step. The first is to make sure that first of all, one acts fairly promptly. Get advice, but then if one's going to do that, then one's need to be decisive about this. Because if you continue to work over a period of time, that may well be seen as having affirmed the contract of employment, notwithstanding your grievance. Secondly, you must make sure that it is clear that your leaving is directly caused
By
the matters that you are complaining about, because the employer will be looking to see, well, there were other extrinsic reasons why you went. It had nothing to do with the employer's conduct. And then finally, just make sure that this is the right thing to do proportionately, because you're going to be stepping often into unemployment.
Yes.
And you're trading secure paid employment for the uncertainty of litigation and perhaps a claim in the employment tribunal. Exactly. So it's not something that anybody would do lightly, and they need to, if they're going to take that step, they need to take that step with their eyes wide open.
Yes, no, absolutely, David. I completely get that. I think moving on from that standard questions, the questions that we've been through in terms of, unfair dismissal, grievance, and the basics that we've just covered. One of the other questions that keeps coming up for us is there a standard formula for calculating redundancy pay?
Yeah.
Seems to be a hot topic these days, because there's a lot of redundancy has been going on for probably the last 5-6 years in big numbers. And before people put their hand up and, there's a voluntary redundancy stage where people are saying, oh, yes, I'll be made redundant. But what does that mean to me in money terms? Is there a standard calculation?
So there's, first of all, we've got to understand that we're dealing, redundancy usually is a state of affairs whereby the requirement for the worker's services has diminished to the extent that it's either no longer required or therefore he has become redundant, and when that happens, there's a statutory right to redundancy, and that statutory redundancy pay is a formula that's set by Parliament. It's set by the legislation,
regardless of what your contract says, or as well as
so what one has is one's got the statutory redundancy, and then one can have enhanced redundancy pay that comes derived from the contract of employment. So people may well have negotiated terms within their contract of employment that gives them significantly more than the statutory redundancy. And also, when there is a consultation process and employers have identified a redundancy situation and they're looking for volunteers who are going to volunteer for redundancy, then very often they will negotiate terms that are enhancement on the statutory minimum. So the statutory minimum is based upon age, the length of service, and the gross average wage. So I should point out that the statutory redundancy only comes about if you've accrued 2 years of continuous service.
Right.
That qualifies you for
basic,
exactly. And then one applies a calculation. It's 1.5 times week's pay for each year that someone is age 41 or over, 1 week for the period between 22 and 40, and half a week's pay for when they're under 22. So it's a calculation
clearly a formula. What we're saying is there is a statutory formula which is sort of the fallback.
Yes.
Position, if, for example, there isn't something in your contract specifically.
Yes, Yes, and that's what you can actually bring a claim to recover. So you're entitled, there's actually for redundancy, for statutory redundancy, if your employer doesn't pay it, you've got 6 months from the date of the termination to
that's
be able
to...
time limit
that time limit, earlier,
whereas we said previously 3 months in relation to unfair dismissal. So that's an example of a different time limit. It's 6 months in the case of statutory redundancy pay. And there are, I should point out for the listeners that there is a... that there is a cap, there's a ceiling on what you can recover for statutory redundancy, and that gets changed every year. It's effectively every year there is a change to that. So the current is that the most you can recover for statutory redundancy is in the order of £15,750.
Right. So that would be the bare minimum if you've had the service that's over 2 years, if you fall in the category of the right
exactly,
the age category.
Exactly. Because there's a cap of £525 per week on what is used as to calculate the statutory redundancy pay. So so it maxes out at £15,750 currently as of today's date.
Wow. Well, that's all incredibly informative, David. So thank you ever so much. I think we can actually go on, and there'll be various strands off of the headlines that we've just discussed that we can continue off. So I know that we have got many more questions that we want to go through, which we will follow up on in our further podcasts. So don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts, and you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com.